It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Yannacko's here. Renee Ritchie's here. We're going to talk about all the new Apple rumors, including not one, not two, but three new iPhones later this year, and perhaps Apple TV for gaming. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 599, recorded Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. Fruit Phone X. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together with some of the best people in the Mac journalism, Apple journalism, talk about the latest news from Apple all the way from Montreal and iMore.com. Renee Ritchie. Hello, Renee.
Yo, it's so good to see you again. It's such a happy Tuesday.
Lovely to see you again. How are things in Renee land?
I am almost completely moved in. Like, you can see this area is quasi-finished and the rest of the place actually exists now. So I'm way less stressed and much happier.
Good. Looks beautiful.
Thank you.
And of course, he's doing this not for us, but because Vector is now on video.
Well, it was inspired by you, Leo. Like I said, 95% of the stuff in here was completely inspired by stuff that you did.
If you had told me, I would have said, don't do video.
Don't do video.
It adds an amazing amount of complexity and expense.
For way less content.
Yeah. But you know what? I like it. And I think one of the reasons I'm glad we do video is because I think you develop bonds with people that when you can see them, even if you don't watch it every day, you see them once, now you kind of get the sense of space.
Remember Scott Forstall? It's like you can look into your son's eyes and say, how are you doing?
How you doing, son?
I miss the Scott Forstall.
Whatever happened to him? Also with us from the Chicago Sun-Times, Andy Yannacko. Great to see you, Andrew.
Hello, nice to be back.
He's wearing his Golden Knights chess hat.
No, this is my Boston Marathon. This signifies that I was able to buy a Boston Marathon hat. Not everybody can get by
all 26.5 miles of it.
Well, actually, I actually traveled 60 miles in order to get it. So
wow.
That's why I have a 60.1 sticker on the back of my car.
Wow. Lovely to have both of you. Today we will be discussing many things in the Appleverse, including Apple following in the footsteps of Amazon, I think, by creating starting to work on its own health services for its employees.
Yeah, that's great news. I mean, yeah, it's sad that we need to do it, but it's great news that someone's doing it.
Exactly. It's a sign that you really, if you have that kind of scale and you really want to deliver the goods for your employees, you really have to create your own health service. Otherwise, not only is it a good thing to do for your employees if you do it right, but also it actually saves you money because there's so fewer follow-ups. You're basically responsible for everything. You're no longer responsible for fixing other people's mistakes.
Apple is launching. It's going to be called AC Wellness. I wonder if it'll be called Apple Care. For your body.
And Apple Care Plus if you're really into it.
Yeah, right. Two clinics, both in Santa Clara County where Apple's headquarters is. But Apple has how many tens of thousands of employees in that area? Like 45,000 or something. They're advertising for doctors, health coaches, and of course it's Apple, designers.
Well, I love that this is I love that they're thinking a lot about prevention too, because the U.S., I mean, we all know the state of the U.S. healthcare. In Canadian healthcare, a lot of the preventative healthcare workers opted out of Medicare. So we really don't have a lot of preventative health. We have it, but you still have to pay for it. It's not included in Medicare.
You don't get preventative healthcare in Canada?
Very little. Like, if you have a problem, you can go there and they'll fix it. And it's amazing. But they don't
pay for checkups?
I mean, they pay for very basic stuff, but there's a whole slew of preventative medicine that countries like the Scandinavian countries pay for that just aren't covered under Medicare. And it's a whole historical thing about different medical unions not wanting to join in and all these things. But
it seems like a mistake because you save money on healthcare if you do preventative care. That's less expensive and presumably, you know, a lot less expensive than a heart attack.
Absolutely. And if you start covering things like Apple's going to be doing a wide range of fitness consultations and planning and dietary consultations, and that stuff literally say it's pennies on the dollar to what you'll pay for actual medical treatments.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of weird math behind that. When I looked into this about a month ago for a different story, it turns out that encouraging people to come in, basically setting up an infrastructure so that if someone says, "Gee, I somehow don't feel right, I'm gonna have a doctor look at me," setting up a cheap way to have that happen does pay off. Setting up so that people who are particularly people who have high risk of certain cancers get their screenings on a timely basis. Like again, if both your parents had a certain type of cancer, you should probably be, and this person is covered under your policy, it is probably a good idea to pay for the relatively inexpensive cancer screenings that can catch a stage one or stage two before it gets to a stage four. It's other things like wellness programs are kind of an interesting balance point where there's a lot of money. You put a lot of money into the wellness program, but you don't necessarily get it back in terms of better health for the client or fewer claims, because there's so much of this that's based on genetics. But yeah, it's remember that HMOs, however, were first proposed as, hey, look, if we're going to have, instead of having the old fashioned style of insurance, if we have our providers be actually actively involved in our health, it can only be this, that if you're investing in this person's health, there'll be fewer claims. But actually, it kind of turned out to be the reverse of that, where the HMOs created their own brand of problems once they figured out where the loopholes are and how to, again, ban people from coverage. So.
Look at this. This is very progressive. Apple's hiring, if you go to acwellness.com/careers, of course, traditional doctors and nurse practitioners, but also health partners, who works in direct partnership with a primary care physician to help patients improve their health and wellness through sustainable behavior change. Health partner, behavioral health, clinical exercise coach, care navigator. A care navigator sets the tone for the patient experience. Sounds like a receptionist, whether it's the patient's first phone call or their first interaction with a team member entering the center. Yeah, it's a receptionist. Medical assistant works with the care team.
Oh, you skipped phlebotomist, my favorite word.
Phlebotomist. It's funny that they're calling. I mean, that's the people who obviously draw blood for blood tests, but I guess they must need a lot of them. I don't know. Medical assistant works with the care team to create a frictionless experience for patients of the wellness center. Coordinating care. Nurse coordinator. Again, frictionless. They're really working on lubricating the experience.
Yeah. He blasted aluminum hospitals, Leo.
I guess it's a necessity. I wonder though, you know, we've seen Apple, Google, Microsoft with ambitions in health, back when there was an initiative to get all the patient health records digitized. I think everybody saw that as a gold rush, and then both Apple and Google decided to pull out of it, realizing there were, you know, pitfalls. But I wonder now if the next big thing for these giant corporations is creating healthcare first. I mean, Amazon, you've got to think Amazon is not merely thinking about healthcare for its employees, but ultimately about creating a business.
Yeah, healthcare retail transactions to get a piece of there, Leo.
Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you want to have Apple Healthcare? I'd buy it.
It's always going to be great for the first 5 years. It's in 10 years when the numbers are really coming in and they figure out what this is costing them. Only a company like Google or Apple or Amazon could do this, because remember that you can't create a healthcare program with the idea that is going to be profitable or even break even. You're creating a covenant with people that says that if you're giving us this money every single month, if we're taking this money out of your paycheck, we will have your back if you get into a health problem. And so eventually, after 10 years, you get enough data in the system to figure out where the huge losses of money are. And frankly, in the less ethical arenas, what people can be sort of put off and stalled before it pay. If someone's basically coming to you for what's going to be $830,000 worth of treatment, and you figure that it will only cost you about $380,000 to litigate your way out of this, at some point, the person who's in charge of making sure that part of the operation doesn't sink the company is going to opt for the evil option. So it's going to be. I think these things could work really well if it's all within Apple. You remember how many employees that Apple has? They can do it at that scale. It would be a lot more difficult once you try to make it bigger than that. Once you're trying to provide healthcare for people that aren't quite so dependent on you for your livelihood as part of it, as part of an integrated service, which we all know Apple is so good at, that could work really well. It'll be a totally separate business if they were doing it outside, but the data collection would be valuable in and of itself.
There's a precedent for this, of course. My healthcare comes through a company called Kaiser Permanente, which was founded by Henry Kaiser, an industrialist in the 30s, for his workers. They formed an insurance consortium, and it ended up being it's an HMO. It's in the Western states, and it ended up being, I was just looking at numbers. They have $64 billion in revenue, 208,000 employees, 21,000 physicians. It's a massive healthcare system created privately, but by a company. And so there is a precedent for Amazon and Apple to do this. This is what AC Wellness Network is saying on their webpage. This is the Apple Wellness Network. Believes that having trusting, accessible relationships with our patients enabled by technology promotes high-quality care and a unique patient experience. This is fostered by an environment of continuous learning and teamwork, which in turn allows us to work with our patients to achieve exceptional health outcomes. The center offers a unique concierge-like healthcare experience for employees and their dependents. Now, it may be, you know, there's such competition for talent between Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Google, especially in Silicon Valley. It's bitter that anything you can do, that's why you got free food and ping pong tables and all of this. They're really trying to make it up, you know, especially for the smart engineering students coming out of college. They're trying to make it a desirable pick. And, of course, number one is stock options. I think most people working at these companies are looking at the value of the stock, and Apple's got a good shot there. But I would imagine something like this, healthcare for you and your dependents, that's better than you can get otherwise would be great. And I imagine it also, at a certain scale, saves Apple money. But I love the fantasy that this might become available to people who don't work for Apple at some point.
If that were their only goal, then they have enough employees that they could muscle an insurance company just like they were able to muscle AT&T when they were introducing the iPhone, to give us concessions, give our iPhone customers service that like no other service plan on any other phone anywhere. So if they did want to go to Kaiser Permanente or whoever and say, here are our terms, you have to cover cancer screenings, you have to have a super 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 low deductible, you have to have walk-ins so that people can flat fee of $15 anytime they've just got I'm just kind of not feeling right, I need to get something checked out. And then any of these companies would be thrilled to get these 100,000 employees on their rolls. So I don't think that they're up to anything quirky here, but you also have to think about all the information they get about how American healthcare works, or how the world, worldwide healthcare works.
Right.
Just not by stealing information from their employees, but just by simply being at the top of this pyramid.
I could make the presentation to Tim Cook. These are the 12 great reasons for you to do this. It doesn't surprise me at all. And, you know, the first one is the most obvious. It'll help you with hiring. It's good for your employees. But there are a lot of benefits to Apple.
There's also the Cook doctrine, ways. The one that Horace Edyard defined so well, where, you know, Tim Cook likes to enter areas where he believes that Apple can offer a unique, differentiated experience and significantly change the way the industry currently works. And healthcare has all the hallmarks of that. And to do it at a retail scale, at a commercial scale for everybody is hard. But to start it, at least on a company scale, like you said, makes all the sense in the world.
It is very interesting, isn't it? Because we've been talking for a while. What's Apple's next thing? And Apple's, obviously, that's a big, big challenge for them. Corporate, you know, they've 70% of revenues come from the iPhone. You can't, you know, you have a duty as Tim Cook and the executives at Apple to think of, well, what happens 10 years from now? And I like this a lot better than self-driving cars, to be honest with you. I think there's something there and something that's doable.
It folds in technology they're already making. They're pushing heavy on fitness and health with Apple Watch and with next generation products, and all of that will fold right into the new upcoming patient records for iOS and for watchOS. It all folds in very neatly for them.
Even if you don't make it a business, there's businesses that could come out of it. You know, it helps the watch, but also, you know, you could one of the things Apple could do is create Apple-based healthcare software and hardware for medical practices and hospitals, right? That could be a big business. There's lots of ways you can go with this. Anyway, I like it. I thought it was very interesting. I like seeing that.
Even it could pay off for ordinary people, even if it just turns into lobbying efforts. If they see the pain points in the system and simply say, here is a law that would prevent in our us being our own healthcare provider prevents us from having two families under one matriarch or patriarch that needs different kinds of service. If you were to remove this, we could actually give better healthcare to these people for less money and suddenly getting that law passed.
Yeah, really cool. Lots of rumors about Apple, and I think we have to give credit to Mark Gurman and Bloomberg, right? If Mark says it, it's better than if Ming-Chi Kuo says it.
I mean, I love Mark, but this is the Ming-Chi Kuo rumor.
Is it? Oh, so Mark's regurgitating it, huh?
Well, it's not regurgitating. You call this like one source, and then you get two sources, and then you get the case leaks, and then you get the manufacturing renders, and it's all part. It is part of the seventh seal on your way to iPhone apocalypse every September.
Yeah,
is it credible? We're talking about the Apple plans giant high-end iPhone and a lower-priced model. In fact, you're right. Ming-Chi Kuo also said three phones this year. The largest iPhone ever. I think they said 6.5 inches, right?
Largest screen. I think last I heard it was still roughly the same size as a Plus iPhone because that's, there are limits to the human hand, but it will be the largest screen ever fit.
So imagine an iPhone 8 with an edge-to-edge screen, and that's basically what you're talking about.
There have been a lot of complaints from users about how they love the iPhone 10, but the screen feels smaller to them than the iPhone 8 Plus, or the iPhone 7 Plus screen that came from. So I can certainly believe that.
It's funny because Lisa and I both playing with our iPhone 10s just the other day said, "But this, I love the size of this screen. It's not as big as." But again, it might be hand feel as opposed to screen.
Well,
I don't
it's
know.
Also optical because Apple made a deliberate choice not to use the split view controller. Like for the iPhone 7, going all the way back to iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, iPhone 6 was a standard iPhone, just a little bit bigger. iPhone 6 Plus got a split view controller, got more columns. They used more of the real estate. Then when they went to the iPhone 10, because it's a little bit, I mean, it's taller, but it's not as wide. And they felt it was a better experience to stick with that single view, that single column view. So it doesn't do as much, doesn't feel as much like a mini iPad. And I think what people want is to go back to that feeling like you have a tiny tablet in your hand.
Yeah, and of course it would cannibalize probably iPad sales, which have been coming back. But I would love a 6.5-inch iPhone. Bring it on.
I don't think Apple's precious about the iPad Mini. It was a product that they had to be convinced to make to begin with. Yeah.
I think they really want to try to get some of those Galaxy Note sales back now that the Samsung has a model that doesn't ignite. I think that they realize that bites into that's biting into their purchases. There is a niche for people who have need for a high, a larger productivity minded phone. I don't think they'll go so far as to make it work with Apple Pencil, although wouldn't that be interesting?
Please.
But I think that's where they're going to go. Ooh, yeah,
that would. It'd have to be a smaller pencil, right? A little stylus-y kind of.
You know,
golf pencil.
You're not going to carry this around with a phone. It's too big. It's not.
The Apple Pencil Sketch.
The Sketch. I like it. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. But that's one of three. So there's this 6.5-inch largest iPhone ever. It actually would be bigger than a Galaxy Note even. Then an upgraded size, a handset the size of the current iPhone 10, and then a replacement for the SE, which is admittedly getting a little long in the tooth. A less expensive model with some of the flagship phone's key features. All three would have Face ID, for instance.
There is an SE replacement, which is not this phone. This phone is designed for people who want a less expensive. It's almost like the iPhone 5C strategy, but instead of going for pop art, they're keeping the same characteristics of an iPhone 10, but there's a limit to how much OLED that Apple can actually consume in any given cycle, and also to the price that you can charge for those sort of premium. Because OLED is still a super expensive technology. So by making an iPhone 10 that has an LCD screen, for example, and doesn't have every one of the brand new bells and whistles, you'll reduce the price. I think one of the challenges they have now is the iPhone 6S, iPhone 7, iPhone 8 are all on the market. They all look identical, and there's very little differentiation for the iPhone 8. But if you get one of those into the new form factor, then you have a lower cost option. And I think that'll promote a lot more upgrades than it would if they just kept around the 8 for another year.
Okay.
Yeah. it's also going to be keen to see. Remember that I was surprised last year to see exactly how big the iPhone line is right now. Yes. That they didn't really clear any of the wheat away from the field as they brought in these new models. So my guess has always been that they did the math and figured out that it was cheap enough to keep. Given component costs that they already have on hand, given the stuff that they already have, it might be okay to simply keep the line as thick as possible, and then that will tell them what phone do they need to make that they're not making already as a new product, and or what do we not dare cancel. So I wonder if we're going to be back to a 3 or 4 iPhone lineup, because when you have the idea of having so many annual phones still on the price list, you've got to wonder why that's so and how long it's going to last.
Yeah, I think the SE, I mean, some, the people who buy the SE, some people just wanted an expensive iPhone, but some people still really want that very small one-handed iPhone. And the next generation of that sounds more like what an iPhone 6 or 7 or 8 size device, but with a full screen. So maybe an iPhone SE thing, but with a full size screen. So you get that 4.7 inch screen, but in that small form factor.
So yeah. Mark is repeating the... rumor that we've said, well, that may not be true, that the iPhone 10 hasn't sold all that well. He's saying Apple sold 77.3 million iPhones in the final quarter of 2017. Analysts projected 80 million. So that's off by almost 3 million. Not a huge difference, a million a month. Is that now credible now that Mark's saying it?
It's hard. I mean, it's hard, but they're also more expensive. Apple's making much more profit off each one. So I find that kind of stuff hard to tell. We'll eventually get numbers on it. I don't think it matters if they're within a few percentage points.
Yeah, that's awfully close. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, is that the fact that they created a brand new product and they sold gangbusters of them, just fewer than analysts thought they would? How big is that problem? I don't think it's very, very big.
They were sitting on shelves and they sold half.
Exactly. But it might be signal.
It's different when we introduce a new phone and then all of a sudden the price drops from $650 to $500, and then there's a special deal somewhere you get $400. Yeah, exactly. That's when you start to worry. I don't think we're in that kind of situation.
It might be a signal though from consumers that Apple pushed price too far. It's interesting because Samsung just announced its S9 and S9 Plus, and while that might have been an opportunity for Samsung to reach Apple price levels, they didn't. They went with $720 for the 9 and $840 for the Plus, so still significantly below the iPhone 10 selling price. Actually,
it's an old marketing thing. It's like you want to sell it for the most you can without losing too many customers that you're making less money if you sold it for less. So if Apple calculates that they'll sell 3% less, but they'll make 20% more money, that's a good deal for them. If Samsung calculated that if they increased the price, they'd sell 50% less, that's not a good deal for them. So it's always on a model-by-model basis.
Yeah,
And with Samsung, they also have two other variables in there. Number one, they already have a $1,000 phone that they don't necessarily want to cannibalize. So if you're basically now charging $950 for a standard phone that doesn't have a stylus, doesn't have some of the features that the Note has, that's a problem for them. But then you also have the problem where Apple can command that kind of price because they're putting technologies in there that really set it apart and make it feel special. I think that Samsung would have 3D face detection if they had the engineering and the manufacturing in order to actually put that in the phone this year. They don't shy away from putting in an incomplete, not quite finished product that at least demos well. So I think that it's significant that they have not made that move. So if they were to put these next generation pieces of hardware inside that phone, that would sort of enable them to kick up the price a little bit. I think right now, all these factors, including the fact that they're responding to the iPhone 10, means that it's very, very much in their best interest to keep the prices down for now.
Mark,
there was this horrible tweet from a former Samsung, I guess an embittered former Samsung employee. Said, oh, great. Samsung finally won up the iPhone 8. And I just.
Although Samsung at that event on Sunday, and we covered it, we streamed it. You can watch it on our Twitter Live specials. Father Robert Ballasera and Ron Richards from All About Android. Apple got a few jabs from Samsung. They mentioned no notch. Yep. They mentioned headphone jack. They mentioned, and we've kept the fingerprint reader, but we still have face recognition. They did also attempt to duplicate Apple's Animojis. I'm not sure why. And so they didn't do it as well.
Apple had an Animoji that was, I never saw it, but I heard about it, that was very similar to that. And they didn't ship it because they considered it too creepy.
It's basically you. So you take a picture of yourself and then it turns it into, like a Bitmoji, it turns it into something that kind of looks like you.
if Snap never really trademarked Bitmoji, because they would have done great with this.
Yeah. Well, frankly, whatever Apple does with Animojis or Samsung does, Snap's been doing it for a long time anyway, right? So it's not, and people have played with the Samsung version, say it's not as responsive as the Apple Animojis. I couldn't care less. I mean, I used Animojis a lot for a day, and I haven't used them since.
It was interesting technologically that Samsung didn't put the fingerprint reader underneath the screen, because we've heard about some much, and operating at Apple or Samsung scale is very different than operating at small batch phone manufacturer scale, but they didn't get the same fingerprint scanner underneath the glass. They did move it, which was great, and they did finally allow you to have both iris and facial scanning at the same time, which is great. But it seemed like this is what Apple gets blasted for in the quote unquote S years, where they sort of fixed up what they got wrong the first time. But I mean, it's a solid phone and people will like it.
I'm going to order it. It looks pretty good. And the camera, they're going straight at Apple with the camera. F1.5, F2.6.
How do they do that? Because HTC tried and they couldn't get rid of the distortion. So I'm super curious to see what Samsung can do at 1.5.
It may be just that all cameras, even our high-end Sony Alpha cameras, have distortion and errors in the sensors. They're corrected in software, so it may just be they got good enough to correct any distortions in the lens. Apparently, one lens has both apertures available to it.
Yeah, it's actual mechanical switch, right? Yeah. You see it moving. Right.
Yeah.
That's super interesting. The easiest way to get more light into a picture is to put more light into the sensor. So you would want a smaller f-stop. But there's also what if you're in an actual sunny day, then that becomes a problem because you get more artifacts, more problems with a smaller sensor. Excuse me, with a smaller aperture. So I hope this works out. I hope we see how well this works, because if it works, you know that Apple's going to be looking more hard at that in the next year or next two.
Dual lenses, just like the Note 8. Portrait mode, just like Apple. It looks like a good camera. I'll be very interested to play with it. I'll be getting it in a couple of weeks, and I'll let you know. But
I'm not as enmeshed in this, but what Andy said earlier, I'm getting the feeling that the Note is more of the flagship phone now. It's a higher price point. It has more features, and that sort of makes it okay that I think this doesn't reach as far as a Note every year, or at least the Note is gonna come and quasi-eclipse this come the fall.
Yeah, particularly, again, 3D face scanning. It just opens up so much stuff that kind of works if you don't have 3D scanning. Works if you have 3D scanning, and it's not just the case of being able to source as many components. It's also having actual physical room on the device. I mean, we joke. I will never stop joking about how it turns out that Samsung had room for IP68 and a headphone jack and all the other cool stuff they wanted to put in there. But I also don't see in this new model where they would have had room to put in to sacrifice for the extra sensors and the extra readers to do it right.
A notch. They could have added a notch, Andy.
You know, I was looking hard at the nine. I know it doesn't have a notch, but I don't miss it. I don't think it has.
Isn't
it has
that funny? We've come around to saying, "Do you miss the notch?"
Well, no. I'm saying that.
Well, Android P is going to support it, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. But we've seen other phones where they've tried to do edge to edge by saying, well, what if we actually just put a circle of nothingness near the top of the screen, but we let it go to the edge? And that's interesting. And having the notch on the iPhone. Oh, God, that is weird as hell.
Who's doing that?
They had an edge to edge camera, but in order to take a selfie, you have to pop up a little pop up camera at the top.
That would be weird. Yeah. Nobody's doing that, right? You just made that up.
Yeah, that was a concept. There was a concept phone at NWC.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but also the Essential Phone had this idea of saying, what if we have a much, much better sensor that clicks on magnetically onto pogo pins? And that's an interesting idea, but I don't think that anybody who's buying a modern phone at regular premium prices, I don't think they're bothered by image quality to that extent anymore. They would, spend an extra $125 to $200 for a better attachable camera, and B, remember to put this camera in their pocket when they go out over the course of the day.
Not Steven Sonnenberg, at least. He's just shooting with iPhones now.
So I guess we'll wait and see. But I'm looking forward to trying the camera. I think one of the things that's happening that's interesting, Android's been it feels like the Apple laps Android, then Android caps up, and then Apple laps Android, then Android catches up. And it feels like one of the reasons that Samsung might want this Note 8 S9, Note 9 kind of stagger step is to give it a chance to see what, I'm sure they're not saying this, to see what Apple does. And then, okay, well, we only have 6 months to the next phone. We can kind of get there quickly.
Everybody's watching everybody else. Yeah. Apple's watching. It's not just it's not copying. It's more like you can write a play, you can rehearse a play, you can do all this sort of stuff when you're writing a play. You don't know what you have until you put up in front of an audience to see how the audience reacts to it. So the reaction in the field to this, any new features that Apple puts in the next phone, is going to be carefully monitored, not just by Apple, but by everybody else. So that's why I kind of like the idea of I will, again, continuously joke about how Samsung doesn't hesitate about putting out a feature that's not really quite there yet just to have a good demo. But nonetheless, you look at how people react to that. Are people buying more phones, and are they being affected? When you do all that market research about what made you go for the Samsung Galaxy Omega, and they say, well, the thing is, I really like the idea of that Pico projector that's actually also part of a camera, so you can project things onto your dog while it's moving. And yes, it doesn't work, but okay, let's work on Pico projection technology for the next one.
Apple. The one thing that still endears me about Samsung, though, is like they have the event. The event is starting. I'm about to watch the live stream, and then the embargo lifts, and suddenly all these videos go up, and I don't know where to look anymore. And then, and like they're so excited but so awkward. And then like they put things, they say, hold up your badge, put your phone in front of it, and now everyone's hands are full. And then they're waiting for them to clap, and you're like, no, just calm down.
That was pretty funny, wasn't it? You knew. Yeah. I was listening. Yeah. We did the stream, but I was listening to the stream because I was driving somewhere, and you knew that the reason there wasn't clapping is because people were going, I have the phone in my hand, I have my badge in my hand. What am I gonna?
And the guy on stage is going right.
Like, and they're going, I did want to applaud because that was really cool.
That was really
augmented
cool.
Reality. You held up your badge, you shot the picture with any Android phone, I presume, or maybe even an iPhone if you had the Samsung app on there, and you would get an augmented reality in your hand of the Samsung Galaxy S9, so you could turn it over, you could see the front and the back. That's clever, very clever.
Oh, and the colors, Andy. We got there's purple.
I ordered the orchid. I believe it's orchid.
Orchid. I ordered the orchid. It's not lilac?
I think they call it orchid, but I'm not sure. Mm. So Apple's next generation, of course, will be the A12. Let's see. They did Bionic. They've done Fusion. Zippity-doo-dah. I don't know what they're going to call it.
I don't know. We'll see. That's just branding. That really is just they have a bunch of people in a room, and they try to think of a cool word.
But benchmarks are starting to come out of the 845, the new Qualcomm chip. And then Samsung has its own Exynos chip in the international version of the S9, the 9810. Interesting benchmarks from a non-tech, understanding, of course, that these were based on the, you know, whatever that pre-production phone was they were able to get their hands on at MWC. But not great results. And if you really look at the benchmarks consistently across the board, Apple's way ahead of the competition. Monsoon is the A11. That's on top.
I think Sasha Sagan explains this really well. It's like people assume that Samsung phones are going to use Samsung chips, but they're actually completely separate companies that just both license the Samsung name.
And in the U.S., because of CDMA licensing, they have to use the Qualcomm chips.
I mean, they could use Qualcomm modems the way Apple does, but it just doesn't matter to them as much. But I think it would be great if they – I mean, Huawei and one of the Chinese companies is doing their own silicon now too. I just think it would be such a great world if Samsung was super serious on integrating silicon as well.
I will, I don't see 845 benchmarks yet, but we'll look at those. But my guess is this performance of the iPhone in as far as I can tell, every single benchmark is significantly ahead. The light blue
especially
is the
S9. Thread.
Yeah, and that's what Apple optimized for, single thread, as they should, because in most cases, that's what's going on.
It's the UI, it's the responsiveness. Right. That's what gives them that really tactile feeling.
Here's a couple of benchmarks where the 845 is fast, but these are not compared to Apple because for some reason there's no Apple results in there. I guess these particular benchmarks don't work on iOS. But in everyone that iOS is part of, Qualcomm and Samsung are significantly farther behind. Orange bar is Qualcomm's 845, and the blue bar is the S9 with the new Exynos chip. And there's no color for the Apple bar. It's just the one on the top. It's just the one at the top. That's all.
This from a company that 10 years ago wasn't making silicon.
Pretty impressive, I got to say. Now, they're all based on ARM designs, but it's not, you know, the design. It's how you implement it that makes
Apple went wide and slow.
Yeah. Wide and slow.
Yeah, benchmarks aren't terribly impressive. It's what it does with that processing power. And every spot in the iPhone experience, you see features that you're not gonna get the benefit of the CPU by looking at a higher number on a benchmark. You're gonna get it by how quickly it can take HDR photos. You're gonna get it by how rarely it's stumped by a really badly coded web page because it can actually sort of navigate its way around loopy code. Samsung has really nice CPUs, but they don't do much with them that is very much user facing.
Yeah,
the Pixel phone is different.
But, yeah. According to Apple, Gurman, Apple is considering a gold color option for the updated iPhone X and the larger model.
It's big in China, Leo, and big phones are big in China. A big gold phone will be huge.
They couldn't, according to Gurman, they couldn't do gold for the current iPhone X. So good.
I don't think that's technical. I think that's just in order to get enough of every phone that you need a scale, and this phone was not designed to scale.
And you need something to get people to buy a new phone. And we've seen
purple.
This.
We told you for the last few weeks, yep. Leo. Purple.
It worked well last time. Just make it gold, and that's I have to have the gold, rose gold. Remember,
violet
I have
gold.
To have, yeah, violet gold.
I'm not even joking. I wish that that were an annual thing where in March you will see the same phone that was released in September, but it will be a new vibrant color for spring. You'll get all the people who are on the fence and maybe they weren't really seduced by the, oh my God, the new phone. Oh, I got to get the new phone. Oh, my friends have the new phone. And then, you know, the hooks sort of are removed from your heart. And now you find that you're still doing fine with your iPhone 6. But as soon as you mean there's a purple version of the iPhone 10, ka-ching.
Gurman points out, of course, that Apple's plans could change, but they make prototypes, and these are based on prototypes that they may or may not end up making. He says in some regions, Apple's considering offer dual SIM, which is something they've never offered, but everybody else does. And if you're in Asia or a lot of places, people move around in Europe from country to country, they would like more SIMs. Let's see what else. Updated operating system, possibly iOS 12, codenamed Peace, including an upgraded augmented reality capabilities, deeper integration of Siri, digital health monitoring, and finally, the ability to use Animojis in FaceTime. We've talked about that before.
And no new home screen for you, but you can use Animojis
in FaceTime. LCD on the less expensive phone, the top two would be continuing to use OLED. Aluminum edges on the less expensive phone, stainless steel on the top two. Glass backs on all three. Not flashier stainless steel. Is this a stainless steel back? No. He's talking about the edge, right?
It's hard. Yeah. I mean, Qualcomm has technology to do inductive charging through metal, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody implement it.
I am so funny how Apple, of course, made wireless now the thing again.
They invented it last year.
Invented it last year. Thank you, Apple. Oh, that's me. Sorry. I was trying to take the case off my phone. I started playing reggae. Don't mess with me, man.
Didn't know that was a feature of iOS 11.
Yeah, you squeeze both sides and it starts playing Bunny Whaler.
Calls 911 and plays you something soothing while you wait for the EMTs.
Okay, I think that's the entire Gurman rumor for that one. Although there was an earlier rumor that Apple is planning to also release an upgraded AirPod.
Come on.
What will be new in the AirPods?
Water resistance.
Water resistance.
Hey, Siri. Slow-mo.
More tap controls.
Touchless Siri. Yeah.
Slow motion audio.
By the way, I do have to say, Samsung announced 960 frame per second slow-mo audio on that new video. That's a selling point by itself. Apple's tops at 240, right?
Yeah, although it's continuous. I think Samsung's capturing 0.2 seconds, but I still want those 0.2.
Well, they say they can do it because they put memory and DRAM into the sensor on the camera, so they're recording.
That's great. So Samsung's biggest problem is that they still have no idea what silicon is underneath everything else that they do. It's either Qualcomm or Exynos, which means they can't specifically targeted. Apple can make an image signal processor because it knows it's Apple silicon. It's going to hit over and over again. So Samsung has to do its best to sort of abstract that away. And we saw Google doing that with the Pixel Core not the Pixel, is it called the Pixel Core? Something like that, the Visual Core.
Image Core,
something like that. And now Samsung's putting DRAM out of the thing because it just doesn't have its own consistent silicon to hit. So I mean, it's great that they're doing it. I just wish they would do their own silicon.
AirPods are produced, I did not know this, by the same people that do the HomePods. So maybe the new AirPods will leave a ring on your furniture. I don't know.
We know if these don't. Does anyone test it? I haven't
put them. Will there be a W2 chip? I'm scanning through this.
The W2 chip is in the Apple Watch Series 3. So I don't know if they would call this Apple Watch W1P or if they would call it W3 or...
I think it's early to do new AirPods if they were to put them out in this first half of the year. But at the same time, they're selling like, hotcakes. They can't fast.
And I think people really want, like, especially runners who like either sweat a lot or run in the rain, really want the water waterproof resistance feature. Yeah. It's high demand. Yeah.
That's where they're failing at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I think they're going to want to try to figure out how to keep them a little bit cleaner. Because that's where people who now have been using them daily for like 9, 10, 11 months, that's where they're saying now, I don't know why these sound so much worse. And then they read online, if you give a little bit of mouth to mouth to your ear pods, you will actually suck up some of the crud that's been sucked in there. And then
tiny
people
windshield
saying,
wipers.
Yeah, exactly.
Apple, this is interesting. CNBC found this tidbit in Apple's security guide, the iOS security guide, which Apple puts out every year or so. In past years, the security guide kind of hinted that they were using Amazon Web Services and Azure for iCloud storage. This most recent security guide says it's Google's cloud. Replacing Amazon and Microsoft.
I couldn't get excited. I mean, as far as I understand, Apple just does this the way they, Taiwan Semiconductor is going to make the A9 and then Samsung's going to make the A10. They take competitive bids. They try to get the best rates and they try to get the best storage that they can. And if that is Google 1 year and Amazon the next or Microsoft, they'll go if someone makes them a better deal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's absolutely bidding in competition because, who wouldn't want.
And Google's coming on hard because they're not. Google has not traditionally been in those conversations. A lot of them are still about Microsoft Azure and Amazon Web Services, and Google is competing hard for that. So if they made Apple a deal, they're going to go.
I should probably mention at this point, Google Cloud Services and Amazon Web Services are both advertisers from time to time on our network. I use all of them myself.
But yeah. This is why this sort of sports team and mentality is just so useless when you're trying to say, Apple is the top of everything. Well, Samsung's the best at this. So, Apple always, for every component, they make the best decision they can possibly make for this product and for its users. So it is going to be chips from a whole bunch of different manufacturers. And when they decide to do their own silicon, it's not because that they are thumbing their nose at Qualcomm or somebody else. It's because they see an opportunity that they are leaving on the table because they don't control that part of the experience, but it certainly is a good indication for Google. They really are rolling the dice very, very hard on being the infrastructure that every other company wants to rely on to power all of their services. So when you see Google, you see the numbers. Facebook is not in trouble, but you see some troubling early signs of how people are disengaging from Facebook. And given that right now people only interact with Facebook through an app that gives them access to a social network, long term, that's a problem for Facebook. Whereas Google, when they their engagement is up because people are engaging in all kinds of different Google services that patch into everything else there is, and they're also making sure that in the future, cloud services are going to be a competitive thing that Google offers. Machine learning services are, again, another thing that is offered competitively by Google. They're working so hard on making sure that the entire world, when they are running AI and machine learning models, they are using Google services in order to create that. So this is why Google is probably going to be alongside Apple in the next 5 years, and a lot of other companies, even Facebook, could suddenly be holding on to a lot of valuable personal information, and they're in a position where they need to start paying off dividends for people, and they start looking at, our users did click through an agreement that says that we could sell whatever we want for whatever reason. We just never thought we'd be that desperate. So that's another difference between Google and Facebook.
Should also, by the way, thanks to Scooter X, who passed along the actual germane text from Apple's iOS security guide. Each file is broken into chunks and encrypted by iCloud using AES 128-bit encryption and a key derived from each chunk's contents that uses SHA-256. The keys and data are stored by Apple in the user's iCloud account. The encrypted chunks of the file are stored without any user identifying information, including using third-party storage services like S3, Amazon service, and Google Cloud Platform. So it doesn't mean they're not using Azure anymore. Oh, well, maybe it does, but they are certainly using Amazon and Google, and it doesn't matter. Now, interesting point here, the keys to all of this are held by Apple, and if you're in China, you might want to know that as of the end of the month, Apple will move the iCloud keys to the Chinese servers. Not
starting next week.
Yeah, next week. By the end of the month is tomorrow. So, a couple of things to raising human rights fears. It's, I guess, the case in the past, Chinese authorities had to serve a subpoena on Apple in the U.S. to get that information, but Apple did give it to them, but they had to go through the, you know, U.S. courts. Now they'll just do it with whatever the rules are in China, and I'm told that it's often done without a warrant or subpoena.
Exactly. It's really an open-door thing. And remember that this is a government that if you say things that are unpopular, you're under arrest.
Yeah,
and that's not as bad as the situation in Turkey and or even Russia, but it is a situation where they don't like people saying things that are unpopular, and they have all kinds of tools to hit you, to smack you back down if you do. They've locked up journalists. It's a bad. I have to say that I don't see that Apple had any real choice in the matter. As Tim Cook often says, that our policy is to submit to whatever the local laws in the region that we're operating in. And many human rights organizations agree that if a company like Apple, hypothetically in this situation, they can do more good for the people of China by staying in there and giving them communication services than they would by simply pulling out because of this one thing. However, my only disappointment here is that it really does underscore that Apple's biggest face, Tim really has to start balancing all of these signs, all of these what seem to be concessions towards China and wanting to look good to the Chinese government with statements that there are limits to how far we're going to go, that we think that privacy and security are important things for everybody, not just when it becomes inconvenient for us. They should mention that it becomes a problem when governments try to weaponize the phones in people's pockets. So it's going to be the longer that Apple puts off having a really good policy statement about that, the weaker their position is going to be. They Apple and Google and Facebook, these companies, they have the power of nation states, and they really are going to have their own State Department really to make sure that they know that we have power. We're not going to just simply let anybody use that power. You can't count on us to do this certain sort of thing. We will use that power tactically and strategically when we have to. So
Apple says, while we advocated against iCloud being subject to these laws, we were ultimately unsuccessful. They decided it was better to offer iCloud under the new system in China because discontinuing it would lead to a bad user experience and actually lead to less data privacy and security for its Chinese customers.
I mean, there's
customers.
A lot. I did a whole 15-minute video on this yesterday, so there's a lot to unpack. But the short version is there's several issues involved here. One is that iCloud absolutely has security and privacy components, but it also has data retention components. And for a lot of people, that's incredibly important, that you know that the photos that you're taking are backed up, that the thesis that you're writing is backed up, that your personal notes, all of those things, if you lose or break or destroy your phone, you just get a new phone and that all comes back down. And removing that ability from people is a direct hit to the functionality of that phone. And it's unclear if Apple pulled out who would do that. Would be Tencent? Or would it be China Telecom? There's no really good solution for that. And also, data is incredibly valuable. And we're talking about China right now, but there is a huge movement to repatriate data. People don't like the idea. And I know this always strikes Americans as odd, but people don't like the idea internationally of America holding the keys to all the data. And I know for a lot of people outside the U.S., especially after San Bernardino and other things, and all the Snowden information, there was a huge amount of backlash against America holding all that data. China probably feels that the NSA has direct access to all the data of Chinese citizens right now, the same way the FBI believes that all the Huawei equipment gives China direct access to the American citizens' data. And this is going to be something that plays out over years. And right now it's America and China and major markets. But when France passed passes a law that says you have to have localized data and you have to have a backdoor, or when the UK is part of their data, you know, because they have a huge surveillance state, and to their credit, they're transparent about it. Not that it makes it great, but they're transparent about it. When they start passing these laws, we're going to be looking at a place where almost every country is going to want ownership of their data. It is so valuable. Google and Facebook spend billions of dollars acquiring it all the time, and these countries are realizing that value. And I think beyond the politics and the security implications, we're just seeing the very tip of the iceberg of sort of nation state ownership of data.
Well, yeah. GDPR becomes the law of Europe in a couple of months. And this is going to be a similar issue where there are very strict privacy rules. Apple has said, Noreen Corral, who's vice president and chief litigation counsel at Apple, last fall said it will be a heavy burden. The heavy processing requirements on corporations doing business in Europe are just tremendous. It really does pose a challenge.
And Microsoft is in front of the Supreme Court right now about whether the U.S. government can subpoena data on external servers. I mean, the whole thing is in turbulence.
Yeah, they're arguing that today, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say something quite this heavy, but I've been sort of, if anything, 2016 and 2017 has made many of us keener students about the history of the 1920s and 30s that we maybe skipped over that in high school. And I wish I weren't so aware that everything we're seeing about how we're manipulating data, that whereas this used to be sort of a one world community, that there is the internet. You can't do anything about the internet because the internet is everywhere and nowhere at once. Now we see so many more laws and rules being placed to say that, no, this is the French internet. And this is the American internet. We have the ability to rule about what a French person's data is worth inside America. And Google is now dealing with the problem of the right to be forgotten, the basically takedown notices of just stuff from the search engine that you just don't like. And not only is this mind-boggling to people like us who grew up watching the internet so free that if you just wanted to walk into a server, it probably had an open door in the form of a guest account that was there specifically so that you can go into German university servers and just see what's there, to the idea where this internet belongs to me. If there is an embarrassing picture of me from spring break 1992 and I don't want it there anymore, you have to take it down. You have to make sure people can't find it easily. That can be rather troubling. So long as I don't have a big problem, so long as people have the ability to make their own choices. I don't have a problem. I wouldn't have a problem with China, so long as if people wanted to have their data stored elsewhere, they could do that. But of course, they don't have that option. So there's going to be so much trouble in the next 10 years over this.
It's an interesting process that Apple's doing. So basically, from the beginning of January, for 8 weeks, they're sending emails and push notifications that alert people that if you are in China and you are a Chinese citizen and you are using an iPhone within the country, they are going to try to move your account to China. And you can say, you can agree to it, or you can say, no, I'm not really a Chinese person, work in China, subject to Chinese laws, and refuse to have it migrated. If you don't do anything, they basically put up an agreement and you have to choose. There's no way sort of ignore it or not make a decision about it. So you have those two options: either turn off iCloud and stop using it, allow it to be migrated, or say, no, I'm not really subject to these laws. And then they're still maintaining, like, the device is the same hardware encryption on the device. The passcode is still no way to crack it. Even Apple doesn't have that. And Apple maintains that they're still going to have control over the keys and controls over the data. But it's hard to believe that, because we've seen in America FISA courts and national security letters try to get around what people can say about who has access to what data anyway. So this is more of a beginning than an ending to me.
Yeah, and what worries me is that naughty people are going to find ways to do naughty things. Like our own government, surveillance organizations within the United States are specifically prohibited from conducting surveillance on its own citizens within its own borders. However, they are still free to tell France's electronic apparatus, say, by the way, we'd really like you to keep tabs on Andy Anatko's emails, and then we'd like you to give those emails to me. That's perfectly fine. I really think that if the next amendment to the United States Constitution is going to have to be Bill of Rights 10.5, in addition to that simply defines that here is what your rights are as an American citizen to the data that you generate simply by living here. And I believe that I should have the ability, just like I can just like I have the ability to check my credit report, I can tell, I can take a look at any person who has any scrap of data on me and simply ask them, send me, I can do a FOIA request and simply say, give me all the information you have on me that you've collected through my web browsing or through my bank transactions, and let me correct something that's incorrect. Maybe it's not right for me to be able to wipe out something that I don't like, but at least allow me to see that, okay, for one thing, I don't know why you think I'm pro-gun. You might have seen me visit a couple of sites. I don't think guns should be illegal, but I'm not pro gun in the sense that I think that everybody should have them. Don't tell people that I'm pro gun, particularly if I'm applying for a home loan or something. And since so much of this data is being put to so many really bad uses, I really do believe, and I'm being absolutely sincere here, that just as revulsed as we are by pictures taken in the 1900s, 1910s of 5-6-year-old children, their faces blackened with soot because they're spending 12 hours a day in a coal mine instead of in a classroom, there are going to be people 100 years from now that are going to be repulsed that we allowed big corporations and data aggregators to control so much of our lives without us having any idea or any power over that. I would like that to be a basic human right, not certainly up there with a right of freedom, right to jury trial, right of free speech, right to religion, to the religion you want to honor, but that's going to be something that we've proven year after year that we desperately need.
And it's nice. I mean, companies like Apple, they have the luxury, because their business model is not made on retaining data, that they can make data inaccessible even to themselves. And that was initially the plan. I think iCloud was supposed to go completely invisible to Apple, but then they ran into brick walls, like the original version of two-factor authentication. People lost their recovery keys, and then they lost all their data, and Apple was forced to refactor that in a way that was more convenient and less secure. And the same thing with backups. Everyone wants Apple to encrypt backups, but then people can't get their backups anymore. And to them, they care more about the photos up in their backups than they do about some theoretical threat of another country getting access to their photos. And you have all these different agendas to service, and it creates something that is so difficult. And I still think that our smartphones, for example, are the closest things to cybernetics that we have right now, and they deserve a privilege that is far, far greater than spousal or clerical or legal or medical privilege. But we just don't have laws for that kind of stuff yet, and it's not clear we're going to be getting laws anytime soon.
If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. This is, ever since I was a kid, I thought that was a very aspirational thing. The idea that we are in, you don't dream about paradise. We're here. We just need to not screw it up. Yes. At least that's the takeaway I got from that deeply disturbing later scene. I mean that the idea of having a phone that collects, that tracks data on us everywhere, the idea that I can finally get ads, but none of the ones I hate, only the ones that I'm actually interested in. I don't mind that Amazon knows that I was looking at stand mixers for a long time. I don't mind getting a push notification saying, you know how you have these two different stand mixers in your wish list right now? One of them is at the lowest price it's ever been on. That's good tracking. And the idea of a phone collecting enough data on me that it can, and my watch collecting enough data that I can say, I'm not saying you're about to have a massive heart attack. I'm saying that maybe you want to have something checked out right now. If I can, that's paradise. That's wonderful. That's how beautiful life can be. We have to find a happy medium between trusting this device to collect so much information that it can enhance my life in a myriad ways, and creating so few legal restraints against everybody collecting that data and exploiting it that you feel like you've got a home release collar around you at all times.
I wonder if at some point, I mean, you have one idea of the future, Andy, which is some utopian future where somebody, I don't know who, has intervened in this
Jean-Luc Picard, Leo,
in this move towards corporate control of everything. I wonder. Who knows what's going to happen? But I wouldn't be surprised to see a move from techies to create maybe for all I know, it's already happened, a dark web that is outside the FCC's anti-net neutrality rules, that is outside of these corporate spying, that is kind of much more like the Garden of Eden internet we had 20 years ago.
Oh God, Elon Musk could build it on Mars.
Well, you know what? The truth is, it's easy to build it right now. And I would imagine, there is a dark net. I wouldn't be at all surprised. And I think that there are probably a number of highly technologically sophisticated people, like the folks at Signal, like Moxie Marlin Spike and others, who are thinking about that. Why do we need an internet that is infested with corporate and government interests? Why don't we just have a
hippie net?
A hippie net.
It's the same. I think it's the same reason why we need a AAA and we need garages, because we don't want to learn about how this stuff works. We just want it to help our lives. And unfortunately, sometimes you really have to make that investment. If I want to know exactly when I click on a link in this browser, what is the chain of events that happens between that and getting the latest picture of John Cleese with a teacup on his head at a press event. People don't know how this stuff works. They don't realize that part of this is public infrastructure that they paid for. Some of it is privately controlled. Some of it is public infrastructure that has had private controls imposed upon it. One of the demos that I sometimes do for people when they want to know about this, like just, you know, casually, is that I will go to that page on Google that simply shows them all of the information that Google has been collecting about them. And the weird thing is, this isn't some sort of pirate thing that's been going on. This isn't like what ProPublica has been doing, treating the Google search engine, the Google and Facebook ranking algorithms as black boxes that's trying to probe them to figure out how they work. This is something that Google has put as part of their service, saying, we want you to know what we're collecting. And they're flabbergasted. Oh my God, there's a map. Day I can click on a calendar and figure and find out where I and my phone were every single day of the week. Like, okay, now you know it's collecting that. Now if you push this button, it will stop collecting that information. So there's a certain amount of basic hygiene that kids need to be taught at an early age, that they need to learn about money. They need to learn about personal hygiene. They need to learn about basic manners. But they also need to learn about this is what the internet is. This is where people get your information, and this is how you make those choices. I've been blathering on about this as though I think that's the most important thing in the world. I kind of do. But on the other hand, my favorite browser is Chrome, because I like the trade. I like the features it gives me. I don't necessarily – I could put a box on my home network that runs all of my traffic through a Tor router. I don't, because I don't like the speed hit. As long as people know about that and they have the right to say no, that's good. But they can't – freedom is useless without knowledge, and this is one of those situations.
So this is from a tweet that Serenity Caldwell passed along from Vlad Zvov.
I was about to hold it up.
This is, he's at Mobile World Congress, The Verge. You could show my screen. Small notch, 26% smaller than Fruit Phone X.
I want a Fruit Phone X now.
You're kind of reaching here.
So who is this? Funny. Do you know? Is this Nokia? Who's?
I can't tell, but I do know that Brad Ellis is going to be super upset about their lack of super ellipses in the proper
Isn't
format.
Isn't this interesting? So there's on the left their smaller notch, although not nearly as elegantly curved as the Fruit Phone X. On
it
the
probably
right.
Doesn't have all the same components in it either.
Yeah. Isn't that funny that competitive notching.
Vlad blew it. It's not that it has a smaller notch. It's that it has bigger horns. I mean, that's the whole story here. You totally bury the lead.
Bigger horns. I'll have to figure out who's talking is that.
Have we decided on ears or horns? I keep having to pause a second.
I only say horns because of Craig Federighi. You know, like, okay. it feels like I'm 99% sure that when he first saw that, he called them horns.
Boy, it feels like horns, too. Now that you say that, it's like little devil. Yeah.
I like ears because kitty cats have ears.
I think they're unofficially called ears now. I like the horn lady.
Scooter X says this is the Asus Zenfone 5. This is the Asus keynote. Gosh, bless you, Asus.
That's too bad, because Asus has been doing some really great stuff with their phones, particularly
cracks me up. They're putting a notch on there, and then they're saying, it's 26% smaller. It's like, what the hell?
I mean, the Essential phone has a smaller notch than that. Somewhere.
Yeah, really? 50% bigger than the Essential phone notch.
Yeah, that's kind of sad. Also, you know, Fruit Phone. What? How many discussions were had at what level before they changed that slide back and forth?
You can't say Apple. It's a trademark.
No, they could just say BlackBerry. Just do it. I mean, come on.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, great lender. One of my favorites. Actually, one of your favorites, according to J.D. Power. Number one in customer satisfaction. 8 years running. That's pretty darn good. And now I think I'm even more in love with Quicken Loans because they've created a mortgage approval process entirely online, made for us geeks. You could do this whole thing on your phone. It's called Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans realized the mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution, so they created Rocket Mortgage. Gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's very simple. You don't have to. You know, if you go to a bank to get a loan, which is what I did the last time, big mistake, you fill out an application that is so long, so in-depth, and so complicated that you need to reference materials to answer some of those questions, not with Rocket Mortgage. You could do it, and first of all, you're not going to the bank. You're doing it on your phone. Second of all, it's just a few simple questions you know the answers to off the top of your head. Then, because they have trusted partnerships with all the financial institutions, you can share your information with Rocket Mortgage just by saying yes. Then, because computers, they crunch the numbers and within minutes come back based on income, assets, and credit with all the home loan options for which you qualify. They'll find the one just right for you. You choose the term, the rate, down payment. Yeah, term, rate, down payment, and boom, you pick the loan that's right for you, and you're done within minutes. Within minutes. You got that big button that says, I'm approved. Show that to the realtor. Say, see, we're going to buy now. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. You'll apply simply. You'll understand every step of the way fully, and you'll mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Go there right now. Get it all out of the way so that when you're ready to buy, you just push a button and You can print the letter out and everything. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Andy Inako, Chicago Sun-Times. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Now that the...
Watch the little Zenmoji. We weren't finished. It's also got Zenmoji.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
As we speak... People are competing with Apple as best they can in Barcelona. Apple, this is another one from the chat room. Thank you. You guys are great. From Patently Apple. I don't normally cover Apple patents, but I thought this was interesting. Apple files major Apple TV logo trademark update. You see, there it is, focused on all things related to gaming, including a video game console. We'd heard rumors that Apple might be doing a video game console. Wouldn't be the first they did. What was the name of that one?
Pippin 2 Electric Boogaloo.
That was such a failure. Pippin.
Hey, they run for $500 now. I almost bought one when they were up to $300 because I thought it was such an odd thing that I wanted for my collection.
The Apple Pippin. Did they ever sell it or did they just?
Oh yeah, no. Bandai sold it. I think mostly in Japan.
Yeah.
And obviously they did so well that it is easy to find one mint in box still.
The patent, which relates to next generation gaming technology, is signed by one Norman Wang, former senior software engineer at Sony in its PlayStation division.
I mean, as we talked about before, as Apple maximizes the amount of people who are going to buy iPhones, they have to start increasing the common strategy is you get one thing really down, and then you annex nearest neighbors, and you do things like health, and you do things like fitness, and then what else is proximate to you? Well, gaming and entertainment, and you start adding those categories because you can't get any. There's not enough people to add more people, so you try to get more from all the people that you have.
Yeah,
But is Apple in a position where they can really have that many businesses under the same roof anymore? It seemed more. We all know that it's all about these 6 to 8 people in a conference room that are making all the decisions for everything at Apple as though it is one ecosystem together. But we're starting to get into places where when you talk about Google, you talk about breaking them up because the government is applying antitrust laws. With Apple, it's like, can you really have these people integrating healthcare into the same ecosystem as earphones? Can you really have someone making a really great game platform that doesn't care what's happening, that does what it has to do to be an amazing game platform without figuring out how it enhances the iOS brand or how it enhances gaming on the phone? I think that there should be a couple more pirate flags hanging up in Cupertino these days.
What people may not know, when you register a trademark, you register in a category.
Yeah.
And that trademark applies to that category. For instance, we have, this is our trademark. TWiT is a trademark in the category of entertainment in the nature of visual and audio performances. And by the way, Andy, if you want to do more singing, musical, variety, news, and comedy shows. So you're welcome. By the way, we got that one. I'm just looking here. Look at that.
2006.
Well, the first use in commerce, 2005, May 1st. So, but the point being that Apple's trademark, which I think was for video hardware, has been updated to include video game consoles. This is the Apple TV trademark. Controllers for game consoles, video output games, namely video output game machines for use with televisions, apparatus for electronic games adapted for use with an external display screen or monitor. Sometimes Apple, you know, you look at these trademark and patent filings and it's just defensive to keep other people from getting into this. Yeah. But this feels like Apple is maybe thinking about moving into this.
There's the huge question for me is that people always say that Apple doesn't get hardcore gaming, and Apple gets hardcore gaming to the extent that they have many hardcore gamers among their senior leadership, and they realized early on that the biggest profit to be made in gaming was casual gaming. It took the least amount of effort to make the most amount of money, and given everything else they were focusing on, that just made the most sense for Apple as a business. So that's why you have iOS as a monster game platform. You don't have them really competing for Call of Duty or for any of the big, you know, things we think of as classic consoles. But so the questions I have is, does this mean that Apple is just focused? Apple already has video games on the Apple TV. They've had that since they announced the SDK a couple of years ago. They didn't do a great job because they forced people to have the Siri controller, and that led a lot of top studios to say, okay, bye, see ya. And they never really recovered from that. But the interesting thing to me is, are they going to promote hardware that can provide more, like what people call AAA games? And is Apple going to get some first party experience here? Because Apple doesn't make its own controller and Apple doesn't make its own game. And that means that developers hit all those APIs first. They have all the problems with the system. If Apple made their own games, I don't think we would have seen the Siri controller as first among equals. I don't think we would have seen the restrictions to the on-demand resources that we saw that really hobbled a lot of initial games. And if Apple made their own controller and you had the option to buy an Apple TV with a controller, then it would be a much more serious video purchase for people. So I think, like, regardless of the trademark, I'd want to see how Apple starts to position themselves before I go, oh, Apple's getting back into video games.
By the way, don't try to use your first generation Apple TV to access the iTunes store.
That's from 2007. I'm okay with that.
They're going to cut you off. And Windows XP and Vista.
Yeah. I mean, you got to get those things. Like, one of the biggest, and I don't want to get off on a tangent, but one of the biggest problems with iTunes right now is Apple's XP, and they just have, they have people who are buying iPods who connect them over dock cables to or to Windows machines, and they've got to sync them. So the more stuff they can get off that platform, the faster we can get off of iTunes as a platform.
Oh, you think that'll ever happen, though? I don't see any indication. You think?
There's billions of dollars going through there every day, Leo. You don't replace that bridge. Slowly build a new bridge.
Yeah. Well, but I think that's long overdue for Apple to simply say that, okay, you had a great ride with your iPod Classic. Now it's over with. I agree with you that the original clip sized postage stamp iPod Nano with a color screen was awesome, but that's over with now. I still have most of my iPods. I still love them, but I've been going through closets full of stuff. As every time I pull out a fifth generation iPod, I'm one step closer to buying that kit that lets you replace the spinning micro hard drive with an SD card. So I would kind of like to have a full, to have 256 gigabytes of storage on this really cool remote control size device. But yeah, iTunes is a recurring theme year after year. Even when I started doing this show 10 years ago, I think we that was a recurring theme about how awkward iTunes has become, and it really needs to be destroyed and replaced with something equally unlikely and improbable.
Well, good news for HomePod. This is from NPD, one of the analyst groups. They say day one sales of the HomePod outpaced all other smart speaker first day pre-orders, except the Echo Dot, which was so inexpensive that it had a lot of pre-orders at $40. This is NPD has some sort of monitoring service called Checkout that Apple doesn't say, of course. But so this is the only data point we're going to get. But very good first day sales for the HomePod. I'm not surprised. Really, though, it's really day two and week two and month two and year two that that are going to matter.
Same with Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more interested to see. It's not even a fight between the Echo Dot and the HomePod. Not just because of Apple audio quality, but let's see how many people, when they're polled 6 months later, are you still using it on a regular basis? I think there are a lot of people who have Echo Dots that they unplugged it 2 months later so they have room to plug in something else, and they forgot to plug it back in. And then not until they finally do their spring cleaning where they pull all the furniture from the wall will they find, oh, it actually fell under the bed 3 months ago and I forgot about it. So how big of an impact can you have in an individual user's life is the most important metric to me.
Yeah. Good news for law enforcement. According to Forbes Cybersecurity, the feds can now probably unlock every iPhone model in existence. Cellebrite, the Israeli company that is the go-to, they're the go-to guys when you've got a locked mobile device you want to get into, are telling customers they have the ability to get around security of all devices running iOS 11, including the iPhone 10.
I call shenanigans.
Yeah, exactly. How many are they talking about? iPhone 11.0? Are they talking about the one that was released 3 or 4 weeks ago? Yeah. There's a reason why these dot updates come so frequently, and why on the iPhone, that's the reason. That's the one thing where I'll always give the OS provider the benefit of the doubt and always apply these updates immediately, because I really usually think that it's because they found a security vulnerability that they figured out how to patch, and it's less value. This kind of a thing is much less valuable on an Apple phone than on an Android phone, because with an Apple phone, it's part of the culture that you apply, that you keep applying patches as they come in. You don't wait for them to build up, nor do you have to wait for someone to release a patch. So this, okay, it's nice marketing, but oh well.
What is marzipan besides a delicious almond-flavored treat?
Besides Homestar's girlfriend.
So marzipan was a story broken by Mark Gurman. We've talked about him previously, and it was he heard that Apple was working on a framework that would allow essentially iOS apps to run on macOS. Now, my understanding is that sort of like what we saw with APFS, the Apple file system, Apple had several internal candidates and eventually APFS won. With Swift, they had several different languages they were looking at and eventually Swift won. My understanding is that when Apple put together for example, there used to be a separate messages team for Macs and a separate messages team for iOS, and those teams merged. So now the engineering resources are shared, but they still make separate interfaces. But that creates a lot of pressure on Apple. Like, how can they optimize? How can they better produce apps that work on both iOS and macOS? Because right now it breaks my soul that I see Leo sent you fireworks on the Mac, and I still, 2 years later, don't have fireworks. And it's a problem that Apple has to solve. And marzipan was one of the ways. I don't know if it's going to end up being the way that they eventually announce, but the idea of it is that it will allow developers to more easily share code between iOS and macOS development. And Craig Hockenberry, he gave this great explanation. We were saying right now they can share the data back and forth, and that's great. If he or Sean, his development partner, Sean Herbert, fixed something on the iOS version, it's automatically fixed on the Mac version and vice versa. But they don't really share the model. So like the rendering, everything that they've built around those apps, that is still separate. And of course, the interfaces are never going to be the same, because you have a mouse and a menu and a pointer on macOS, and you have multi-touch and your finger and the different sorts of view controllers on the iPhone. But if Apple could just make it easier for developers who put a lot of work into an iOS app to bring those apps to the Mac, the idea is that it will result in more and better Mac apps. And for example, I spoke to Greg Pierce, who does Drafts, the wonderful Drafts app, and he doesn't have a Mac app. And I asked him, I said, if this was real, would he like it? And he said, well, if it's just, you know, running an iPad app in a simulator, I'd do it, because there'd be like three people who want it. But what I really hope is that there would be a way for me to not have to go and learn AppKit, for example, and you have the coordinate system backwards, or have the colors be different, and I have to solve for all of those things. But if it was just easier for me to take Drafts and make a Mac interface for it and run it on the Mac, he'd be all over it.
Good.
I think that is sort of I think that's a huge appeal to this, is just to make it so that the millions of iOS developers can sort of share that love back to the Mac.
You talked to, you had Lauren Brichter from Tweety, Paul Haddad of Tweetbot, Craig Hockenberry of Twitterific, but also from Halide, which you've talked before about, a great camera app, Ben Sadovsky, Greg Pierce of Drafts. And so these guys are developers. They know what's possible. They also know what they would like. And I think they agreed. It was clear, this is on the Vector podcast, that, A, it's not that hard to do. You're already working in a unified environment with Xcode, and a lot of the underlying libraries are similar. And B, they would love to do it, as would Apple, right? Go ahead, Andy.
Oh no, I was just going to say that. Yeah, I don't listen to many tech podcasts because there's so many of them, and usually podcasts are for like house cleaning and relaxing. But I definitely downloaded and listened to that one, and boy, was that a solid! That was a really good show. I just wanted to compliment Renee for that.
Absolutely, yeah. Getting all those developers on really gives it some heft because these are people who would be working with Marzipan. Yeah.
Well, and just speaking personally, I was familiar with a couple of those points of view, but not all of them. And so just see, I was thinking more large scale. I wasn't thinking about something as small scale as I forget who was talking about this, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but it's kind of like when you have having iOS and Mac apps that you're developing side by side, just the fact that the UK recipe for this cake calls for caster sugar. If it just said, if everyone just decided that powdered sugar is what we're going to call this one thing, I mean, it's not necessarily a different recipe. They're just trying to render fonts in a specific way. If they just simply called this routine the same thing on both platforms, so that you could just simply cut and paste between libraries, just that would be a big thing. So it's, again, very much worth a listen. Now, Renee, the person who's actually had this conversation, perhaps you should.
Next time you get all these guys together, ask them if they'd like Apple to support progressive web apps, because I think this is something Apple's missing the boat on a little bit.
Christina Warren touched on that quite a lot because she's at Microsoft now, and she was my co-host for the episode.
Microsoft and Google are big proponents of this.
Yeah, Apple has had a different approach because Microsoft is doing this with Edge now, but Microsoft had a native app platform. Google had Android, but they never really had a native app platform for Chrome. It really behooved them because they own the browser, sort of do these progressive web apps. And Apple's thing was, and this goes all the way back to the early days of Safari and Don Melton, and when they were discussing using WebKit as a primary interface for the iPhone, for example, that web apps are good at one thing and native apps are good at one thing. And they don't want to make, native apps try to run on the web. They don't want to make web apps run native. They think that they have platforms that do both those things very well separately. But when you're in a world where the web is increasingly, and we talked about this because there's some sentiment in the Mac community that Mac apps are being left behind, but it's not really Mac apps, it's desktop apps. All the big revolutionary apps are not appearing on the Mac or on Windows anymore. They're appearing on Android and iOS. It's like the Ubers and the Lyfts and the Instagrams and all those apps that are changing the world. And sort of the web is becoming more accepted. In the old days, you'd turn your nose up at a Java app or an Air app. And now Slack is probably the most important desktop app right now, or the most important new desktop app right now. And it's a Electron app, and a lot of other similar tools are Electron apps. And that's becoming increasingly a thing. And if people aren't familiar, an Electron app is basically Chrome wrapped around a specific web page. So it feels like a native app and gives you some of the abilities of a native app. But if you hit like Command R, it'll still reload like a web page. That's the big tell. And I think that's a really true debate. I think Apple would still kind of turns their noses up a little bit at that because you don't get the performance to get out of native code. But as the world moves to Weblio, I think the desktop, if something like Marzipan doesn't help reclaim the desktop for native apps, then I think the progressive web apps are more of the future.
It's my feeling Marzipan is an old fashioned way of dealing with this. Kind of something like Java and Swing. Where you have you attempt to make native tools for both platforms and then an underlying shared code base. And I think progressive web apps is a much more modern way to do it. And Apple's going to get pressure to do it if it does end up starting to take hold. They're going to have to do it. But until they support it in Safari and iOS with service workers, I don't know, that's a big stopping point for it, and I'd like to see them support it. It means that true cross-platform development's possible. It opens up I'm interested in it because we could make a Twit mobile website that you'd go on an Android phone or an iPhone or some other device as yet unnamed, go to that site. It would download pieces of the code. It would start working offline as a podcast app. And it would be, I don't believe that it can't be as performant as a desktop app.
We saw Facebook try. They threw out the app.
Basically what Facebook does, right?
They threw out Joe's app that he made for iOS. So even the iOS app, and they reprogrammed it as a progressive web app because, hey, we're a web company. And then Mark Zuckerberg had to come out and go, yeah, it sucks.
That was early days. And if you don't have support on the platforms, that's why it's important Apple supports it. If you don't have support in the platforms, it is going to be just a wrapper around a website. That's not what PWA is. But Apple has to support it. They have to put service workers on iOS. And I'm sure they won't be for competitive reasons more than anything else, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, I think then it's just I understand the appeal to it, but to me, it's the same thing as write once, deploy anywhere, and that it makes life easier for developers at the expense of user experience. And I think no matter what we do, native apps are still a much better experience, much more performant. They leverage the hardware and especially the unique elements of hardware way better than progressive web apps. And I think it's just in Google's vested interest to get everybody on progressive web apps, but I don't think it's necessarily an end user interest yet. Maybe we always say that. In 5 years, they'll be great. Those 5 years never show up.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Marzipan's whole point is just to make it less expensive and less trouble for developers to create apps for Mac or an iOS, I'm all for it. It may not be, the reason why I found this podcast so enlightening for me personally is that I was always thinking about it maybe a couple extra steps ahead as opposed to solving an immediate problem. And so really that's all it needs to do. And I think that it will help both platforms. Google is working on a new operating system called Fuchsia, which I always mispronounce, but they've been releasing code. They've been releasing functional binaries that people can build. They have not talked about it as the future of Google app development. But this is what when I see this sort of stuff being built, I've not been able to build it myself. I don't have the hardware for it. But when I see people explain it, if this really does look like next generation stuff where a screen is just a screen is just a screen, which requires a whole new attitude towards what a document is, what data is, and what an application is. So that's how big you really have to flip that table all the way over to make something that radical. And if Windows has taught us anything, it's that people are okay with something that does the job and is perfectly functional. The fact that they really have to get Dr. Strange to create an evil incantation in league with Mephisto to get people to stop using Windows XP, for God's sakes, to get people to stop using Vista, for God's sakes. That shows when you have a system that simply works and it doesn't simply break down and stop, and the company does nothing to simply unplug it, people will continue to want to use it. I think that people are going to have to create a need for a next generation operating system before this actually becomes a productive thing.
I obviously live in a utopia that will never exist, but we're
it's coming, California, Leo, man.
Everything, we're getting there. With legal weed, everything seems like utopia, man.
let's do our picks of the week. What do you say, gentlemen? Okay. Perhaps starting with Renee. Do you have one? I don't see one in here.
I thought. I usually sneak it in there right before we do it.
You could sneak it in later. That's why I'm giving you a chance. I can go to Andy and let you sneak it in.
I don't know if I've picked this before, but I've been using it a lot lately.
Wait a minute. Don't tell us what that is.
Okay.
It's a hockey. Oh, it's the new NHL hockey puck. It's the new wired hockey puck.
Here, a spoiler.
The Internet of Things hockey puck.
No. I've seen those before. You put it underneath the cushion in your chair, and so when you're playing those video games, it gives you a rumble in a very special place. It makes you feel like you're connected to the action.
I want this badly, actually. This is now, is it just USB or does it support Thunderbolt 3?
One of the problems with USB Thunderbolt 3 is that it's the same connector.
I know, it's very confusing.
They're joined by one connector, but separated by two standards. Yeah. It's like British and American English. Yep. And you're supposed to be able to talk to each other, but just nobody knows what Hyde Park or baseball is. So it connects over, I'm going to say USB-C.
It's called the Arc Hub from Bourges Design.
Bourges Design, yes. You would buy it and like it. Yes. This solves the problem of, Apple is all in on USB, USB-C and Thunderbolt 3 to the extent that the MacBook Pro does not have any legacy ports. Even the iMac, I'm using an iMac Pro to talk to you on this podcast right now, and it has a dazzling array of ports. It has four USB-C, four USB-A, SD card slot, but it doesn't, for example, have an HDMI port. So I just realized that no matter what port I want, there's just never going to be enough. It doesn't have a Thunderbolt 2 port either. So what's nice about this is, you plug it in, and I'm going to pull out this little, give you a little adapter.
Via the USB-C plug there. Yeah.
The USB-C plug. And then as I turn it around, it has HDMI. Ooh. I was playing with the HTC Vive on the iMac Pro earlier today, and I needed Thunderbolt 2 or HDMI, and I had neither. So I broke this baby out. So you have USB-C there. You have HDMI. You have SD card if you need another one, or the MacBook Pro you have doesn't have it. It has Thunderbolt 2 or DisplayPort, because why ever have one connect for two different standards? And then you have two normal USB type A connectors as well. And it doesn't look like it's not the neatest, smallest, tuck it in next to your computer and make it disappear. I wanted to own the hub, Leo. You know, like you own the horns on the iPhone 10. I wanted to own the hub. If I was going to have a hub, it wasn't going to be this thing that sort of flopped around next to my computer. It was going to be something that looked great and sort of sat there proudly in its own right. So this is like a satellite. It's like a docking station. It's like the Deep Space Nine for my enterprise of a computer. And it just sits there. And I've been using it on MacBreak Weekly when I use my MacBook Pro, because I put the web camera in and I put my microphone in. And I'm using it now. Well, I was using it just before for the HTC Vive, like I said, because I needed multiple USB and HDMI and Thunderbolt 2. And it's just great to have all the ports you want in this little Canadian style hockey puck of a design. I mean, you can't make better than a hockey puck. Tim Hortons has tried. And I found it really helpful and really useful. So I've been carrying it.
$135.
Yeah.
It doesn't have Thunderbolt 3, but it does have a second port, so you could charge while you're using it, which is nice. I spent a lot of money for this, you know, crazy Thunderbolt 3 dock from Otherworld Computing, but that's for my iMac Pro.
I love that one too. Yeah.
But it's $300. It's twice as expensive. But it, you know, so if you need Thunderbolt 3, this is what's, I explain this on the radio show. It feels like every week now.
It's terrible.
It looks like Thunderbolt. It's just USB-C. But
and you need the right case. And why? Like, why did they do this to us? Like, I don't understand.
But that obviously, because it supports HDMI and Thunderbolt 2, that's more than just a USB 3.1 port.
Yeah.
So it supports video. It supports power, I presume, right? You could power it.
Yep.
Yeah. It supports data at USB 3.1 speeds, just not Thunderbolt 3 speeds. That's all.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
And Thunderbolt, the whole thing is like, I spent a week just looking for Thunderbolt 3 things, Leo. And so many things that people say at Thunderbolt 3 are really just USB-C, and the cables are hard. I mean, it's
especially shocking. Drives. I mean, if you're going to get a Thunderbolt 3 drive, you're going to spend thousands of dollars.
And you think you're getting one because the connector looks the same, but then you realize it's just USB-C and it only goes at USB 3.0 or 3.1 speeds.
Very frustrating.
You just want to end it all. It's the worst.
The other one, computing dock, really works very nicely.
Yeah.
Fantastic. If you buy an iMac Pro, that means you have so much money you don't mind the $300.
And it's matching space gray. It's space gray.
Yeah. I bought mine before I got the iMac Pro, so mine's silver.
Oh,
I think I should.
That's what my trackpad is. I have the iMac Pro, but I won't use it. It's sitting here. I'm not going to use it because this is the thread in Apple's design Afghan. It's just the worst thing ever.
I know.
But my trackpad is silver like an animal, and I'd have to sit here using it.
I should trade you my black or whatever space gray trackpad. I actually have the mouse. And did I get the trackpad? Maybe not. Maybe I only have the keyboard and mouse. Yeah.
You're supposed to get the trackpad and then sell it on eBay, Leo. That's how you pay for the whole rest of
pays
the
for the rest of it. Andy Yannacco, your pick of the week.
I got a really goofy iOS app that I really, really like that I stole from Flo Ion's recommendation last week, I think on Android, on the Android show, because I was watching her demonstrate it. It's a camera app called KD Pro, and it emulates an old-timey Kodak disposable.
Oh, my God.
And I love it. It doesn't do anything good. It basically gives you all the limitations that make photography interesting. Number one, you don't get the full screen viewfinder. You just get this little eye hole sort of just like you're looking through like an eye hole viewfinder. That's all you get. When you click the button, you have to actually operate a thumb wheel to advance to the next frame. Number three, there are only 24 frames on the roll. So as soon as you take 24, you're done. And it's not like, I took a picture, now let's go into Instagram. No, you have this mode you can turn on that I suggest you turn on that gives you the full experience. Instead of getting the photos instantly, you can either pretend it's the 1990s and you have to wait 1 hour. So you've dropped off the 1 hour photo counter. Or another option, like you can pretend it's the 1980s and you have to wait a full day to get your pictures. You literally will not see your 24 pictures until 24 hours have elapsed. And you can also do like LOMO stuff, like give me like lens distortion effects. It's a cheap plastic lens and have like light leaking in. You can even do have like on the old timey cameras, they'd have like a time and date stamp by having actual LEDs inside it that would actually burn the date and the time into it. So you can actually have time and date stamp, but realize that it will actually be burned into the pixels. You will need Photoshop to get this time and date out of it. It's free for a buck. You get rid of ads, and there are a couple extra simple features. But oh my goodness, it's so much fun. It's like it's there are times. I don't collect vintage cameras or anything like that. Yeah.
Where do you take the picture? Is there a button?
Yeah, there's a, where is it? Hang on.
Is it the top button?
I think you're using the, hang on.
Where your thumb is. Where my thumb is.
Where am I? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah. I took two pictures that I won't get for a day.
Until tomorrow. Yes.
Jeez Louise. And then you have to wind it with force touch.
And you see, and you actually see the little counter at the bottom go from 22 to.
OMG! Yeah. Now there are in-app purchases, but I think this has got everything you'd ever want.
And it is fun because I don't collect old cameras, but sometimes I will like I have a couple of weird ones that I kind of like that are old, and sometimes I will like go to the expense of buying a roll of film because it's fun to walk around saying that no, you have exactly 24 frames of film on this. This is one cartridge. Once you're done with this, you have no more pictures to take. If you see David Hasselhoff rescuing a child from a burning U-boat, you will not be able to take pictures of David Hasselhoff because you took all the pictures that you could take with this. So it's just a lot of fun. It's a way for adults to explain to their kids how bad life might have been in the 1990s and why there are so few pictures of their parents doing embarrassing things at parties, because you had run out of pictures by the time you got that drunk.
This is force touch to wind it and actually clicks.
Yeah. That's so great.
But you have to turn that on. That's in the advanced features. Turn on the wind film manually and develop time.
Yeah.
So, by default.
I think all of those should be default. The wait 24 should be a default.
I agree. In fact,
yeah,
you should go to the photo hut on the 70s show to get them developed, man.
Yeah,
you actually are too young to remember a photo hut, aren't you, Rene Ritchie?
Oh, I remember, Leo. I remember.
Okay. Oh my god. Okay, guy, Jenny Picks, the developers of this app, I'm giving you the 2.0 feature. I'm telling you, you should create like a Pokemon Go sort of thing where you designate on Google Maps, where like the 24 hour for. So, and only through AR do you actually see the little kiosk, and only when you by geolocation, you're within 50 yards of this place, can you actually drop off the film to be developed, and then you only get them back when you go back to that location.
You have to pay 99 cents for more wonderful, useless features.
I remember when the mall got a one-hour photo place, Leo. That was exciting time.
You do remember that. Okay. I'm just hoping that Ginny Picks is actually a woman named Ginny. I wish it would be. I just hope it is.
I hope so.
That is awesome. Well, mine is not nearly as exciting and fun as you guys. You've got some fun stuff. I just have a tip, really, for people who use Affinity Photo. The company that does Affinity Photo, Serif, is offering for a limited time some free stuff. So you got to go create an Affinity Photo account if you don't already have one, and then you can download for free, the Live Filters Macro Pack, the Studio Retouch Brush Pack, and the Luminance Brush Pack, and add it to your Affinity Photos. I think this is only a few more days available, but definitely take advantage of this, because once you add it, you're going to get some nice features. It's kind of clever. They actually say open it in Affinity Photo, and you have the new library catalogs. Categories. If you use Affinity Photo, which you should, it's really an amazing product. It's nice of Serif to offer this for free. Thank you, Serif.
So great.
We are out of time. Well, not really, but we're done with the show. We're out of stories. How about that? Rene Ritchie is at imore.com. Gosh, man, he's doing great work. I hate to plug it, but I know you're going to probably stop listening to us and start listening to imore.com/vector, the great Vector
podcast.
It's
so short, though, Leo. That's the nice thing, is it's super short. So you can go right back to MacBreak.
Yeah, which is not. All sorts of great, useful stuff. And now with video. Yeah, good job, Rene. Congratulations. And iMore is the place to go for all your news and information, not just about Apple, but about everything. The iPhone, iPad, watch, apps and games, accessories, rumors, iMore.com. Thank you, Rene.
Thank you.
Annie Inako writes for the Chicago Sun-Times about all sorts of stuff. You could find him there and on his website, cwob.com. Follow him on the Twitter, IHNATKO. and here every Tuesday around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. There's this website, Flog Rolling. Is that a new? Did you coin that? I like it.
When I'm embarrassed by what I'm talking about because it's self-serving, yes, sometimes.
Yes. Flog Roll. I'm going to flog roll. I like it. If you want to join us live, you can. The couple of ways to do it, as we had, I had a lovely family here today visiting from Los Angeles. Just to email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put some chairs out for you. You can also, hey, everybody, you can also join us on the stream wherever you are, twit.tv/live, around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC on Tuesdays. We do the show. You can join us in the chat room, too, at irc.twit.tv if you're watching live. Might as well chit-chat with the folks in the back of the class. On-demand versions of this show, audio and video, always available at our website, twit.tv/MBW, MacBreak Weekly, MBW. And wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe. That way you'll get it automatically every week as soon as it's available. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Now it's time to get back to work because guess what? I'm sad to say break time is over.